Good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development. We have a single bill today and lots of people to talk about it. We're excited about it. A couple of notes. Representative McEwen is not feeling well, so she's unfortunately not going to join us today. And at about 9 o'clock, lest you think it's something anyone said, Representative Wisnett, perhaps Representative Williamson, I hope not me, we are all also members of the Ways and Means Committee that's meeting down the hall, so you may see some people coming and going as a result of that. It's not anything that you said or any other lack of interest, but we're dealing with a bunch of different obligations this morning. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2728. Remind the committee, Victoria's going to give us a summary. You should look in OLS at the dash one amendments. That's the current subject of discussion. It may be that we need some additional amendments as we go forward, but please look at those amendments, not the bill as it was introduced. Victoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2728 establishes Oregon Talent Council and specifies responsibilities, requires council to develop talent development plan and update each biennium, establishes Oregon Talent Council fund in state treasury, and appropriates monies to council for purposes of the act, abolishes the Engineering and Technology Industry Council and associated fund and account, transfers monies in fund and account to Oregon Talent Council fund, requires council to identify state agency with which to be affiliated, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. This measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. We're going to start with three people who have been before the committee before: Eric Meslow, David Childers, and Pat Scruggs, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Reed, co-chairs Gallegos and Wisnett, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eric Meslow, and I am the president of Timbercon, Inc., a fiber optic manufacturer located in Tualatin, Oregon. I am currently the chair of the Engineering Technology Industry Council, ETIC, and a member of the STEM Investment Council, the CTE STEM Employers Coalition, and I serve on the board of the Technology Association of Oregon. I am here today to introduce and boast my strong support for House Bill 2728 that would create the Oregon Talent Council. The OTC is an innovative workforce concept that partners with higher education. So I currently hope I'm in front of the right committee. I think I am.
Yes.
I'm extremely fortunate to have with me today a large group of people to tell you a story about why we believe the Talent Council is the right solution for the next decades. The agenda today is action-packed, and each person that will be speaking will be relatively brief, hopefully. My job today is just to give you this introduction as well as a little bit of background in history. We then have with me Pat Scruggs and David Childers, who will talk about the bill in detail for a few minutes. But most importantly, we have got a number of panels from industry to talk about the challenges and the need out in the real world. We have representatives from the technology industry, from healthcare, from energy, and these folks are from around the state. After that, it's important that we talk about how we're going to work with the state. So we have a number of our state partners here today to talk about how OTC would be integrated and work within the normal bureaucracy. And then at the end, we have a little bit of time hopefully set aside for any questions and answers. With that, I'd like to go ahead and get started by telling you a little bit of a story about how we got here today. For the past 17 years, ETIC, which is a statewide industry-led council of executives from the high-tech industry, has advised the state on investments of funds to meet urgent emerging talent needs. ETIC has come in front of this council every 2 years in general and reported back our successes and our failures. Many more successes than failures. The investments funded strategic and targeted industry-serving initiatives in a unique and innovative manner that directed the building of capacity and capability within Oregon's post-secondary education system. During that period, state funds have been leveraged with private investments to double the number of graduates coming out of the engineering schools and computer science programs around the state, and to build innovative and responsive programs to meet the high-tech industry's urgent needs. With talent gaps in high technology as urgent as they have ever been, ETIC started working on the future. How would ETIC continue to evolve and be relevant for the next 10 years? From that effort, ETIC made the following key changes. We reconfirmed the purpose of the ETIC Fund to focus on change and growth initiatives. We rebalanced the existing ETIC portfolio to move funds that were needed for sustaining university technical programs to the HEC. ETIC has reduced its funding size request in the upcoming biennium to roughly $24 million for the HEC and $6.1 million for ongoing ETIC initiatives. And we've increased access statewide of the ETIC program and included all post-secondary levels of education now, not just the four-year institutions. We are now involved with the community colleges as well as the private institutions around the state. But during this process, which has been going on for over 3 years and at times has been challenging, but always interesting, ETIC really has reached out and worked with a number of constituents. We've worked with the universities, we've worked with industry, we've worked with the agencies, and we certainly have worked with the legislature in understanding what could be and not necessarily what is. And we believe we have an additional strategic opportunity. ETIC, by nature, is narrow in focus. Namely, it's meant to meet the needs of Oregon's high-tech community. Although its mission remains critical, it's only one industry sector that we believe could benefit from an ETIC-like investment model. Healthcare, energy, manufacturing, agriculture, and forestry all are facing unique talent shortfalls that are slowing Oregon's economic progress. All could benefit from being able to participate in an ETIC-like model, and that's what we're proposing with the Oregon Talent Council. Specifically, OTC would be focused on jobs. I realized last night when I was practicing that the word jobs are up there. Jobs are great, careers are better, and I believe what we're really focusing on here are careers. Connect talent with regional state economic growth opportunities. Target the most critical talent needs for traded sector and high growth industries in strategic and focused fashion, primarily professional and technical jobs at all levels. So we're talking about the middle 40 as well as the upper 40 in the educational continuum. And ultimately, to foster statewide access to Oregon's diverse population. Our talent needs cannot be met by the Portland metropolitan area. We need to figure out how to engage the rest of the state in a meaningful way. So, today with me to carry on the message are Pat Scruggs and David Childers, who will take over at this juncture.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric, and I'll let you drive if you don't mind. Chairman Reed, members of the committee, pleasure to be here before you today. For the record, my name is David Childers. I'm a resident of Lake Oswego, and I'm here representing the Technology Association of Oregon, where I am the chair emeritus. I also serve as an ETIC counselor, where I am currently vice chair of ETIC, and during my career as a CEO for the last 22 years in the state, I've created a couple of pretty good companies and been involved with mentoring dozens of others. I'm also an angel investor in several Oregon companies and part of the Oregon Seed Fund. I'm here today also in support of House Bill 2728, which, as Eric notes, establishes the Oregon Talent Council. This is a statewide plan, not a regional plan, but a statewide plan to really look at the data that we already have in different ways to be able to understand and how to better connect industry with education and the skills that our companies need. It appropriates money to be able to do investments, and we'll talk a little bit more about that from a standpoint of a competitive RFP process, a request for proposal process that really helps us be able to. It does abolish or sunset ETIC. And as Eric mentioned a moment ago, opens the door for us to be able to embrace other emerging industries and established industries in the state, such as healthcare, energy, food sciences and others, and it will reside inside the Oregon Employment Department, and we have worked hard to coordinate and align with the HEC and the OWIB, SIM Investment Council, and others to ensure that the Oregon Talent Council is well prepared and support the growth of Oregon. Next slide, please. Eric said, and I can't make, I really cannot stress to you the importance of talent. The Technology Association of Oregon has been saying for the last 5 or 6 years that any economic renaissance within the state is going to come on the back of technology. Not pure technology as we've seen it in the past, where it's maybe silicon-based in terms of that we're looking at wafers or pure software. But the fact is that all of the industries that we've mentioned to you this morning share a common interest and a common gene pool, if you will, around technically hyper-skilled individuals. Talent is our number one issue in the state. Next, please. 74% of the executives that were surveyed in a recent national study, and that study was then compressed for Oregon, said that there's a shortage of talent. More importantly, not a shortage of people necessarily, but a shortage of talent in the fact that 50% of the millennials that have graduated actually can't apply their math and reading skills into their jobs. So it's a combination of education, skills, and experience that really make for a good talent pool. In Q4 of 2014, there were 45,000 job vacancies with 132,000 people unemployed in the state of Oregon. The state's own economic report shows that the unemployment numbers to the job openings are so high because we are having to bring in workers from out of state to fill those jobs. And if we could fill only half of those jobs with Oregon talent, our unemployment would fall from 6.7 to 5.6 and be below the national average. So there is a good opportunity here to be able to move through. Next slide, please, if we could. So we know, as I said, that technology is really going to drive this, and we know that over the next few years, we're going to see more and more and more industry develop and grow within the state, and they need access to that talent. We believe that with the creation of the Oregon Talent Council, we can create an environment that links together the opportunities that we have in a great educational system with a very willing industry and the growth of a great workforce environment. And we believe that we can achieve that through the OTC. Next slide, if you would, please. So one of the things that I wanted to share that I felt like was really important, and I think as Eric was saying when I began to look at this, we historically, it's not an Oregon problem. I would tell you that I believe that most educational systems have prepared talent in a traditional bell curve, that it was a balanced bell curve, that you were going to have a certain number of low achievers, a certain number of high achievers, and most everybody kind of fell into the middle of that. But if you actually look at what's going on right now, it's actually a long tail. There are actually fewer number of lower achievers. The jobs that are being the talent that is really, they're not a lot of low achievers in that. And in fact, there is a much broader range of and I don't want to call them average in this because we fill a lot of really solid jobs that don't need specialized hyper talent. Right? And there are a lot of jobs in our state related to that. But we also have, when we start to look at the jobs that we're talking about specifically within the Oregon Talent Council, it's dealing with a much larger number of really hyper-performers, T-shaped individuals with great skills, a lot of experience, and an ability to be able to help their companies grow. So we have to think in terms of not only what it takes to be able to support the growth of these individuals, we also need to take into consideration the way that our industries are skewing our talent pool within the state, and we need to address that as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Ms. Groves.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Pat Scruggs. I'm president of Scruggs & Associates. It's a management consulting company, does work nationally in the issues of areas of innovation, workforce development and entrepreneurship. So I'm here to talk about sort of the structure of the bill and the structure of the Oregon Talent Council. So actually go through this slide, totally against this slide. Okay. So the Oregon Talent Council is as proposed in the bill, a industry-led council. The members, the voting members, between 7 and 21 members, and those are industry executives. There are ex officios from what we call the partner agencies and boards in the state that will be necessary to execute this, and those are listed as above. But the work of the council is intended to be done in committees, primarily around sectors, as well as cross-cutting committees. So energy, healthcare committees, tech committees, and then cross-cutting committees that address critical needs that go across those industries. An example of that would be cybersecurity. So the key duties of the council. The first duty listed in the bill is that it really develops a statewide talent plan that identifies in our traded sector and high-growth sectors what are the critical occupations and skills that we really need to focus investment on. And so it's not all occupations and all skills, there are those core skills that are going to be really important. So knowing that, having that industry verified and prioritized set of information, we think is very important to help with both workforce and education investments. The second duty is really to take that information and work with those partner agencies, so the Higher Education Coordinating Council, the universities and community colleges themselves, Employment Department, our workforce boards, Business Oregon, and others, in really saying this is what those critical gaps in our talent mean to us and how can we work with you in your process to make that and to align our policies with those. The other thing is that it establishes a fund, a Talent Council fund. And in that fund, we would do very strategic investments, co-investments, alongside with private sector and our education and training partners to address some of those high priority needs. That is done through a competitive RFP process, which I'll review quickly in a minute. And then finally, the council sees itself as having a role in helping to coordinate all of the different and helping to coordinate various aspects around those core critical needs. So next. Okay. So as far as an investment focus, there are basically four areas which the fund would focus. Okay. First is to pinpoint the urgent education and training needs of industry. And so those might be for places like energy, that could be power engineering. For healthcare, it could be specific allied health occupations. But what are those growing and urgent needs? The second is really to foster new ways of delivering training. We hear a lot about the fact that industry needs training, but we need to deliver it in a different way. And so how do we foster those innovative ways of delivering training? How do we also keep our existing workers up to speed? This is huge. I mean, you know, in 5 years from now, 85% of the workers will need new skills, right? So how do we keep our workforce up to date with those skills? And then the last thing is we hear constantly that youth really needs good work experience. And so how do we take internships, enhance the youth work experience associated with those critical gaps in talent? So how would we do that? It's basically through a competitive RFP process. So we would take a look at those core needs. We would put out an RFP process to our education and training partners, very similar to how ETIC is doing this currently. And then through that, select those projects that meet those criteria, and especially those that have good private sector and public sector match. So there are some key amendments that I wanted to go over with that are slightly different from the introduced bill. First thing that we did was add a preamble The suggested amendments or the amended bill has a preamble that just states the need for the talent and the importance of this. The other thing in the preamble, it also talks about access and inclusiveness, that our talent needs and our training needs to reach all parts of the state and especially reach out to underrepresented populations. The Talent Council would be staffed at the Employment Department. This was a change, but that we think that the Employment Department is critical on a couple of matters. One is it provides a really good connection to a robust research division that the Employment Department has to help with that talent plan. And we also think that being able to align
Thanks for the warning. All good. Well done.
Okay. I am getting over not feeling good at all yesterday. So
there are many of us in the same boat.
Okay, so I'm in a petri dish. I know I'm feeling flat today. I am sorry, but
No, you're feeling fine.
Oh, okay. Oh, no. Now Eric's going. I know. Yeah. So anyway, it's amended to be housed at the Employment Department, and we can talk about that a little bit if you want to in questions. The other thing is that we just cleaned up some language in the duty section. There was some awkward language, and investment criteria was mixed up with duties, et cetera. So now just you'll see a cleaned up language in the duties and the investment criteria. Oh, thank you very much. The other thing was we added the STEM Investment Council, which was not a partner listed in the first bill, which we think is very important to have in there. So the alignment with the key agencies and councils, that was amended. Again, additional language in the bill about working with REACH across the state and with diverse populations. We felt that was very important to make sure was in the bill. And then also the amendment of capping the monies that is used for staff and operations to be 10%. You know, there was in the original bill, it just said monies could be used, and there was actually two things. So we put a cap on that. So those are some of the key amendments in the bill. And so with that, any just operations, questions, answers.
Thanks. So I want to ask just one really basic kind of question at the risk of oversimplifying to make sure that I'm tracking this and maybe it's kind of a summary, and then I'm interested in what other questions people have. This is essentially, if I'm understanding it correctly, a way of modernizing, updating, and creating the logical successor to ETIC. Is that a fair summary?
Okay. Chair Reed, yes.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So for any of you there, so this the ask on this bill is $15 million. Where does that what kinds of things does that get spent on? Does that get spent on teacher salaries? Does that get spent on equipment? Or where's the buckets that goes into?
Chair Reed, Representative Nierman, yes. It had through – let me put this one. ETIC, which is what we are proposing to replace, a majority of the money, and the money, it was significant, it's $29 million per biennium that was going to ETIC, was used for a variety of things. It was used to hire new faculty to increase capacity. It was used to outfit laboratories and make initial searches for those faculty. It was used by some to hire support staff for faculty. It was used for research initiatives. Interestingly, the money was used best when it was used for a couple of those things and not all of those things. Ultimately, we're not interested with the new OTC in long-term support of programs. What we're looking for is to break down the financial barriers that often stand in front of educational institutions on getting something started. So think of us, we're business people, think of us as investors, angels, so to speak, in regards to going in and matching up needs and then breaking down those financial and other barriers that an institution might have to get something started to meet what industry is looking for.
Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Thank you very much for the presentation. We're all excited about this, and I think it's going to help Oregon more people work. I really like the admin cap. That's good. Gives us credibility. I attended a workshop, NCSL workshop, that looked at other states' efforts to do the same thing, to bring, they called them sections or sources, and regionalizing the work requirement with universities and private to provide this training. I would like to be sure that some way we look at, and they talked about this, timely reviews of the requirement for labor. But technology changes so much, you know, we don't need too many of one before the technology is changing. You need another skill. Also, I think David talked about, the slide was about how the numbers of unemployment's looking better. It is. But, you know, we're still dragging much lower than Washington income. And we need income along with the salary. So hope that the council will be focusing on that, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Reed-Winston. I think one of the things that's really important, and Chairman Reed, in your commentary, that it's a natural successor, if you will, I think that it's probably more than that in terms of the fact that the lessons learned associated, I think that Eric mentioned a bit, but there are a lot of lessons learned that we have looked at from what has worked at ETIC to ensure that those are really brought forward. We recognize that these jobs, these are high paying, these are living wage jobs that we are talking about. And the opportunities that are there, and those opportunities are going to continue, because not only are we seeing a number of great companies spawn in Oregon on their own, we're at a point now where we're seeing companies relocate to Oregon. And one of the reasons that companies relocate or locate in is the availability of talent. And part of what you ask about is that we have already seen in our discussions the willingness of all of the parties to come together and really to dialogue and to be able to reduce overlap involved in a number of things around curriculum, where we had three or four different RFPs come in for curriculum. We brought all of them together and said, we really are happy to fund this, but let's fund one master curriculum that can be utilized by all of the institutions within the state. Not going to necessarily, you know, in fact, I would pay more money for that, because if I'd had a more that. So we're really looking at the way that the members of OTC convene and drive together to ensure that we're keeping pace with that change. We also want to be better prepared to catch the trends of employment need earlier. Historically, ETIC heard the scream of industry late in the game, when there weren't any people to hire. And we need to do a better job of beginning to watch that trending, so that we're encouraging more graduates and more growth to better meet that peak need of employment when it occurs.
Thank you for those comments. The mayor of or councilman from Madras was in yesterday, and also we've got to look at the zones or regions too, like Central Oregon is really trying to get on the bandwagon with drones, because we have the space out there to do that, and so things like that should be considered. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Representative Reardon.
Thank you. I'm very excited about what you're doing, and this may sound curious for somebody from the metro area, but could you talk a little bit about the makeup of the board as you see who might be on it, and how that will be positioned to so that it represents the rural part of Portland, or part of Portland, rural part of Oregon.
Portland got enough rural representation.
Oops. Representative Reardon, Chair Reed, the challenge of finding and getting rural parts of Oregon to participate in a council that is fundamentally located usually in the Portland metropolitan area are real. ETIC has had this challenge for 17 years. We have made it a point to reach out and find representation throughout the state. It will be critical that continues.
you obviously have areas of concentration of business throughout the state of Oregon, and we find that finding partners from Central Oregon or the Medford Economic Zone or from Umatilla or from Ontario is very doable. It just takes hard work, and it takes having great people on your council, on your membership committee, who know how to do that. And we're very fortunate right now to have that in ETIC, and I would continue to stress that, obviously, moving forward with the Oregon Talent Council.
And the reason I ask is, obviously, agriculture is such a huge part of this state still, and we need to make sure that we remember that's very high tech these days as well. So, you know, we need to keep them in mind.
Yeah, Chair Reed, Representative Rudin, the other thing, too, is because of the expansion into other industry sectors, right? So let's say with food processing and energy and other, that does tend to cover more statewide than the pockets of just the high-tech sector that ETIC was based on. So that's going to help that reach. The other thing is, which is sort of the exciting alignment with some of the employment department and workforce efforts, is with their regional sector strategies that you had referred to here, is being able to align with those in the rural regions as well, and ensure that the industries participating in those are also coordinated with what the council is doing. And so through both of those mechanisms, I think we're going to see a much broader reach into the rural areas of the state.
Thanks. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks to all of you. Excellent report. Thanks for your work here, but especially Eric, thank you. I think it's probably appropriate to call you the father of OTC. And the past father of ETIC. But what excites me the most about this is somebody who's, you know, been around here for the last 5 years now. I think the issues we've had, and I would say in some cases the fatal flaws, as we've tried to reorganize and to streamline our educational system, is we've created, I think, far too many stakeholder boards. It's hard to have strategic decisions made when the people on that board are simply there, in often cases, because of the folks they're representing. The thing that most excites me about the OTC is that it is a business-led, industry-led board, so hats off to you for putting that together, because, frankly, you don't need people like me looking over your shoulder. You all know how to make it work. You know what Oregon needs, and hats off to doing that. But I guess I would just ask you, is there one thing here that most excites you about the potential for OTC versus ETIC, because you know each of them probably better than anybody in the room?
Representative Johnson, Chair Reed, we did a SWOT analysis, a strength and weakness analysis on ETIC about 3 years ago when we started this journey. And when we looked at our strengths, and industry has a unique perspective on problem solving. We also have an impatience that is different than obviously state government and the educational system generally have. We're working on quarters, not on bienniums. So I think one of the most exciting parts is continuing to have industry's voice in the conversation. I don't think we need to be highly prescriptive, but we need to be able to make sure that we're being heard, and heard in a way that has some level of authority, some level of impact. And I think where ETIC was always very, very powerful is that we had some money. I've been on a lot of state commissions where I've helped write reports that have ended up on desks never to be seen or heard from again. ETIC got a little bit more response than that because ultimately had funding behind it. So that's what's really exciting. I don't think OTC works unless there's a funding mechanism associated with it. Outside of that, the big opportunity statewide, frankly, and the other industries, as Pat just mentioned, I'm excited because we can now get into ag, like you said, across the state. And if you go talk to folks out at Umatilla right now, they're having a hard time finding computer scientists and IT people and all these things that are involved in agriculture today, something that you wouldn't have thought 20 years ago. Forestry is another area that needs a different type of investment in their workforce. Energy, high tech, which is my baby, and that's what I love, and it's what ETIC was all about. It's a very important piece. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, I think the amazing opportunity is these other sectors as well.
follow-up?
One thing I think we should get on the record, and it was brought to my attention last night, is that there are some folks that think that perhaps the statute that's quoted delineating the university involvement could potentially be led to believe that OHSU is not included, and I don't believe that was your intent at all. Is that correct?
Representative Johnson and Chair Reed, absolutely not. This is supposed to be inclusive of all post-secondary institutions that are, so this would be the private, not-for-profit, regionally accredited schools. This would be the four-year institutions, the seven in the state. OHSU certainly is always kind of considered like the eighth. And as well as, most importantly, and another part that's very exciting, is an emphasis on community colleges. That's how you get state impact. There's 17 of them scattered out across the state, and that's an amazing way, an opportunity to have a real impact across the state.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that up. We'll make sure that we get that right going forward. Other questions for this panel? Thank you for the great introduction. I know you're sticking around in case we surface more questions. Part of the fun of today, I think, will be hearing from a variety of different perspectives of people in different industries and geographies. I'm going to start with a statewide industry perspective from Ellen Berger and Mary McCord. If you could come forward, please. Thanks. We're happy to hear from you in either order. If you could start by introducing yourself for our record, we'd appreciate that.
Okay, thank you very much. So Chair Reed and the members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to testify this morning. So let me introduce myself. My name is Eileen Berger, and I'm the CEO of CoreSource Technology Group, a Portland-based company that has been around for over 20 years. I'm also a member of ETIC, and I've been a member for over 10. I can never remember if it's 12 or 15, but it's been a long time that I've been a member of ETIC, so I've really seen how ETIC has evolved and how ETIC has really been successful in the model that we have been using. And you can also understand that this is a subject near and dear to my heart, that I spend so much time with it. So I really am here in full support of passage of House Bill 2728 to establish the Oregon Talent Council. So today in my testimony, I hope to convey to you the urgent workforce needs that we have across the state of Oregon and why the Oregon Talent Council is the right structure to address these needs and give you examples of how this model is working today within ETIC. So let's start with a real fact here, and that fact is the job market in the science and technology related industries is hot and hotter than it has ever been. But sadly, many of those positions are being left unfilled. And I know this because it's literally my business. One of the services that we provide our customers is to find technology people for them and to place them into their organizations. And so we work daily with people, mainly in the Portland metro, but also around other parts of the state and companies across the country, trying to find the exact right talent that fits. And it's been very, very difficult. This is one of the first times I've ever seen where the market has been so hot and there have been so few people that are available to fill those positions. And so, you know, it's a sad thing to say that even though it's a great business for us to be in right now, we have to shake our heads because there just simply are not enough people in Oregon with the right skills to fill all of these positions. So it's real, and my business understands how real it is. And if you think it's hard in Portland, ask the people out in the rural areas. And in fact, you have testimony in front of you that we've submitted from the different parts of the state. And Mary is here to representing Eastern Oregon, and will relay the story of how she is doing out there. But to answer the question of the representation, the testimony you have are from counselors that are from Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, Western Oregon. We have a needs assessments from Lane County, so we really are looking at what all of those needs are across the state. Mike Stadnitsky, the CEO of Flojo in Ashland, he really states very well what all of them are saying, is that the challenge of recruiting and maintaining a flow of technical talent as our business grows cannot be understated. Talent development and recruitment represents a substantial risk in scaling the business to meet our opportunities. This opportunity is only dwarfed by the risk if Oregon fails to make this investment. High-growth companies offering high wages to Oregon University graduates cannot sustainably grow their business in Oregon. Nowhere is this more evident than in rural Southern Oregon. And so that statement is made by somebody from Southern Oregon, but all the rest of the testimony will say the same thing. So it's a very urgent need, and it's an urgent need that we really must address right now. Because if we can't address it, we can drive up revenue. We can drive up the economy of Oregon, and we can build up not just the Portland Metro, but all around the state. But if we don't do it, we will be facing things like companies maybe having to leave the state, or worse, even failing, and that never helps anybody. So how will OTC address these needs? And simply through strong collaboration. I mean, you've heard what we are proposing for the OTC, for the Oregon Talent Council. And really at the heart of it is strong collaboration, firstly between industry and higher ed across the state. And with that collaboration between industry, higher ed, we'll all be able to identify, prioritize, and fund new initiatives that would meet the ever-changing needs of industry. Because one thing that's true is we have needs today, but those needs will be changing over and over as we understand how we need to change the technologies, as we see the new problems that we're facing. And so we have to always be on top of and understand what the needs are of the industry. So this collaboration between industry and higher ed can do that. We also need to have strong collaboration between the different higher education institutes. As Eric said earlier, you know, we are really bringing into OTC all of the higher ed institutions across the state at whatever level they are, the privates, the publics, the community colleges. And so the strong collaboration means that we can leverage the resources where they are and not try to build them in every region that we have, but leverage across the state all of the great resources that we have to educate the people in this state. And the other thing that strong collaboration does is it gives all the companies in the state, the mid-size, the small companies in the state, a voice, a way to influence those needs and a way to influence the state itself in what we really need to have in our workforce. Without this, the small and medium-sized businesses have a very difficult time being heard. The big companies can always be heard, but not some of us small guys. So with the Oregon Talent Council, what we really are seeing is strong collaboration, which really means strengths in the numbers that we of the people and of the ideas and of the diversity of ideas that bring together a strong solution for the state. And so we can't do this alone. We have to be able to do it with an organization like Oregon Talent Council to drive all of these initiatives and drive the strong collaboration throughout all of these organizations. So I know this works because I've been with ETIC for a long time, and we have a lot of successes. I mean, Eric talked about our successes and sometimes not so successful, but our successes have been a lot. But lately, we've really been focusing on the collaboration across the state, and we've got some good things to say about that. So let me give you some examples on that. First one that I always like to talk about is Portland State and the Columbia Gorge Community College. With ETIC funding last year, they were able to put together a transfer program. And so in the words of Warren Harrison, who is the PSU chair of the CS department, and Frank Toter, the president of Columbia Gorge Community College, they've said that ETIC funding allowed Portland State University to collaborate with Columbia Gorge Community College to develop a computer science transfer program aimed at allowing Gorge residents to complete their first 2 years of computer science study at CGCC before transferring to PSU. It is unlikely this collaboration could have occurred without support from ETIC. And so that's really a great example of what Eric said, is that what we are trying to do is new initiatives, get things off the ground that could never have gotten off the ground without this kind of cooperation and this kind of funding. That's a great example. Another great example we have is Western Oregon University and Southern Oregon University. They have started a program where they are actually sharing their computer science graduate courses, so that really what's happening is students in both campuses are attending some of the same classes at the same time and interacting with the same professor and with each other. And that's all done through technology. And, you know, because there's a lot of technology that allows remote learning to go on. And this is an example of a good way to spend the money, as you were asking about, to spend the money, and it's mainly technology, because what we already have the people who can teach the courses. We already have the curricula for that. But what we didn't have was a way to really get it out to everybody across the state. So this Western and Southern collaboration on the remote learning is a great example of what we can do. And they are now thinking about moving that into the undergraduate programs. And we hope to be able to work with a number of the other community colleges and universities to try to spread that type of learning across the state. We've really added community college representation to ETIC, so now we have, and one of them is in Clatsop Community College, so, you know, they're coming from different places. PCC is another one. So we really are on the cusp of creating greater statewide access to degree programs through proposals that we have in process. We have proposals now that are creating transfer programs that are collaborative between community colleges and universities, four-year degree programs that can be done at the community colleges but are done by remotely by some of our universities. So there are so many things that we are now driving to try to make this all real. So this wouldn't happen without the support of ETIC right now, but really OTC can do all of those same things.
Ms. Berger, I hate to break in. I'm starting to look at the clock a little bit and all the other great people who are to follow you. You're giving great testimony. I wonder if you might be able to wrap up.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually at my summary.
Excellent. Thank you.
So in summary, you know, the industry has and will continue to have workforce needs across the state, and that translates to jobs for Oregonians and jobs that today are not getting filled. So the state can address this, successfully address these needs through strong collaboration of industry and higher ed. We do have the higher ed resources in this state, but they're not all in one place and they're not all well coordinated together. By driving industry and higher ed collaboration across the state, we can provide the same level of education across the state and create a workforce that meets the changing needs of the critical industries, technology-related critical industries throughout Oregon. ETIC has proven that this type of collaboration works and can be cost effective. And by widening the scope to the important industries in Oregon, I believe very strongly that the Oregon Talent Council can drive the right kind of state collaboration across industry and higher ed and successfully address the growing needs of the state. So I really urge you to pass House Bill 2728 and establish the Oregon Talent Council. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your testimony. We really appreciate it.
And I'd like to introduce my colleague.
Fantastic.
Mary.
Ms. McCord.
Good morning, Chairman and Representatives. My name is Mary McCord. I'm the General Manager of Cayuse Technologies. I am located in Pendleton, Oregon, so I made my drive over yesterday because this is really important to me. Cayuse Technologies is an information technology company that is owned 100% by the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, and we are located on the reservation. I currently have 300 employees providing technology in different ways to Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies. We're challenged by being able to attract and retain our talent to provide the services to our current clients. Our clients expect the same level of education or work experience that they would get from a metropolitan area. We hired high school graduates, we developed our own training, and we deliver that training. After a while, that becomes expensive to us, and being able to retain it also is expensive. I've only been a member of ETIC for 2 months. So learning more and hearing everything today is very exciting to me. Our community college did not offer any computer science classes or engineering classes in the past. We're working very closely now with them to try and change that. We paid for summer internships of their faculty that had the background to teach our classes last year over the summer, our boot camps, so that we could give it back to the community. We could keep the people in our community. When we run out of talent, we then are forced to go to the larger cities to go across the state lines. And what we find is our attrition then goes up because those individuals want to go back to those cities. Our clients can't afford it, right? They want the low cost rural salaries. We're giving living wages, we're providing good services, and we're keeping jobs from going offshore. I spent 35 years with a really large consulting company that was my primary job, to move work offshore. All of our employees are U.S. citizens, therefore we're able to provide some really good services to our federal government clients. They love it, but we are challenged daily with being able to attract and retain. I don't necessarily need a four-year graduate. I need people with certifications. I need people that can outreach to get the training. We teamed with Eastern Oregon University last year to allow some of their computer science classes to be taught in our county. And we did that because I have a PhD on my staff who is now the adjunct professor. We opened up our facilities to anyone in the community so that we could at least expand. Right, we are a prime area for the unmanned aircraft. The companies that are bringing that in, if you think about it, they have all the technology infrastructure that sits behind supporting whatever data those devices are capturing. Right, we're trying to train our employees right now so that we're competitive to them. We know there's a huge data center coming into Morrow County, right? I'm concerned with the success of this new company because of the lack of talent and the challenges I've had. We're strong. We're only 8 years old. We're growing. I look for people with a good attitude and a good aptitude, but I need to know what's out there for me. This is why I'm so excited about this council. I didn't know all these programs were out there and available. I want to be able to reach into some of the larger universities, the larger schools, bring those faculty in, make a phone call. We're creating our own training. Again, that's expensive, not knowing that it's already been done somewhere else, right? Again, we have 300 employees who are from our cities and our communities within our counties. We're all rural. A 60-mile commute is not uncommon. They love their jobs, and they're proud to be employees. We won Employer of the Year this year from our county. So I appreciate the opportunity to come today to share with you, to ask you to please support this. It's so important for the ongoing success. Technology, as you said, is everywhere. Agricultural, natural resources, the forest industry, the waterways, they all sit in my community. And our folks don't want to leave. So I thank you for your time, Chairman Reed and others.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for these two? Thank you very much. We'll hear from Skip Newberry and Serge Leaf on the technology front.
Thank you, Chair Reed. Committee members. My name is Serge Leaf. I work for Mentor Graphics Corporation. It's a company, it's one of the largest software companies in the world based in Wilsonville, Oregon. $1.2 billion company employing roughly 6,000 people worldwide. So I support this bill, and I wanted to offer the industry perspective on this, actually my personal perspective on this, because I have lived through the talent shortage on a day-to-day basis since I have come to Oregon. So in 1995, I was asked by my CEO to create a business plan for a new product line, which I have put together. I needed a considerable amount of money to execute this program, but I got only a small portion of what I was what was necessary, which basically gave me no choice but to go offshore. I was competing against well-funded, nimble startups, and I was the first manager in a company that started an operation in India and ended up implementing this program. And it subsequently generated $150 million for the company. So I was followed by other managers in the company offshore to different places because they saw that this was a compelling way to execute projects. Initially, it was because of cost. Over time, the cost difference between doing things offshore and here has diminished. And in the mid-90s, we started to observe something different. There was general shortage of technical talent, and going offshore for cost savings was no longer the reason to go offshore. It was simply because we couldn't find people in this country. Partly it was due to an internet boom that happened in the mid-90s. Effectively, what happened is our company and most of the companies in our peer group doubled down on offshore. So now Mentor Graphics has a facility in Wilsonville, our corporate headquarters, which was designed by the founders to house something like 6,000 employees, probably has enough land for twice that, 12,000 employees. But the reality is that campus is occupied by 1,200 people. The company does have 6,000 employees, but the remaining personnel is scattered across 50 worldwide R&D centers. In fact, just in my organization, I have operations in Germany, Hungary, France, India, Pakistan, Egypt, and San Jose. In fact, one of the programs in my division focuses on Internet of Things and is literally a United Nations kind of operation where the program director is based in Cupertino, hardware engineering is in Paris, Internet infrastructure is in Lahore, Pakistan, and application software is in Cairo. I'd like to change all that. I'd like to do as much as possible here because aside from, this is being done out of necessity. We just cannot find talent locally. And operating like this across multiple time zones and geographies is cumbersome. Coordinating projects is difficult. I personally fly on the average of 150,000 miles every year to sort of keep things together. As another example, I am currently building up a new program on cybersecurity and literally cannot find anybody in this, not just in this state, in this country, that I can we can hire into this program. So we're looking at Belgium and France and Holland at this point, and even as far as California. So, for example, in talking, I was planning to run a pilot program through UCLA. I was talking to professors there describing our needs. We need somebody who understands system architecture, digital hardware, analog hardware, low-level software, operating systems, application layer, encryption, compression, stuff like that, cryptography. And the guy is listening to me, says, yes, yes, yes. And I said, and by the way, I would like for them to be U.S. citizens. Because this has a lot to do with Department of Defense applications and NSA and stuff like that. And the guy said, well, you just described the white buffalo. This person does not exist. Until I mentioned U.S. citizen, he thought that was all workable. So now we're actually moving this project to Stanford, where there's a better chance of finding this type of personnel. So to summarize, the shortage of technical personnel is a significant issue. However, public companies are forced to solve this problem. In other words, we can't sit around and wait for personnel to magically appear. We respond to our shareholders, and so the way our industry has found to solve the problem is to simply view workforce pool as a global resource. I have one of the engineering directors in my organization who has, and this is basically a choice I leave to engineering directors in my organization. One of them really likes hiring young graduates from Oregon State specifically, and he likes having them all in his hallway, and he believes he achieves all kinds of great things that he couldn't achieve with a distributed organization. I fully support that. But even this guy who really wants to operate this way is struggling in finding qualified people. So these are the jobs that are not really affected by cycles, by economic cycles, as you might think. In the depths of 2008 recession, I was visiting one of my customers, General Dynamics, in Scottsdale, Arizona, and they told me that they consistently have 600 open positions just at that site that they cannot fill. So to conclude, and being a representative of the rural part of Portland, Bull Mountain, I support this bill. I believe that the talent shortage is a national issue, but is also a local issue. I would prefer to do a lot more in Oregon than I can right now. And the limiting factor is availability of qualified people.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Yep. Mr. Newberry.
Great. Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Skip Newberry. I'm president of the Technology Association of Oregon and reside in Portland. The TAO represents hundreds of technology and tech-enabled companies throughout the state, from startups to some of the world's largest companies. I'm here in support of HB 2728, which would create the Oregon Talent Council. Manufacturing, retail, tourism, transportation, entertainment, consumer goods, I struggle to name an industry that is not being transformed by technology today. What that means is tech is a huge driver in economic growth. In a survey of Oregon tech execs that we complete every fall, this past year, they identified as their number one issue potentially inhibiting growth as the perceived disconnect between the sources of developing talent and industry needs. And what the Oregon Talent Council would be is exactly the one-stop shop that would help to match industry needs with the organizations and institutions that can most develop talent effectively in the state. The speed of innovation is increasing, and companies' talent needs can change very quickly. So having a coordinated, streamlined system at the state level that can bring together workforce, educational, and economic development resources with a single point of contact for industry is exactly the type of system that we need. Last year, we worked with ETIC to conduct talent needs assessment surveys of local tech, and tech-enabled companies in places around the state, ranging from Central Oregon to Eugene, Springfield, the Gorge, Medford, Ashland, Portland. On average, the demand for software architects, developers, and engineers was more than double the next highest job category in all of these regions. In the Portland area alone, there are currently 2,400 open jobs in software and IT today. We are seeing tech-enabled companies like consumer goods, healthcare manufacturing, and agriculture all scrambling for the same types of skilled talent that are skilled in both developing as well as using technology. So by expanding the ETIC model to other industries and high-demand occupations, we can be more inclusive of rural areas and underserved areas of the state. As a case in point, as a direct result of these surveys, we're now expanding into Eugene in a partnership with Lane Workforce Partnership to better meet the needs of the growing software, IT, and tech-enabled companies down there. And the projected growth over the next 10 years is really driving the sector strategy there. We're looking at Central Oregon in 2016, and in conversations with the Gorge and in Medford Ashland, we're seeing the same exact things. We're also seeing demand driven by expansion into the state. This is referenced by Mr. Childers earlier. Over the course of the fall, I was receiving 1 to 2 phone calls or emails a week from firms, tech-enabled and otherwise, that had relocated into the state and were hiring in droves. One case in point, a company that acquired a small startup here and has since grown about 5 years ago just announced they were hiring over 200 people just in mobile software development over the next 2 years. And that is not by any means the top of the heap. I can think of 3 or 4 other companies, tech and tech-enabled, that plan to hire more than that. So developing and connecting the local talent pipeline, in summary, with the needs of industry is exactly what we face as the most critical issue on the part of industry. And the creation of the OTC, I think, is the next logical step in that process. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Questions for either of these two? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, both of you. Excellent. I've got questions for each. First of all, related to what you're just talking about, I'm intrigued. Could the industry put together an essential skills toolbox? And, you know, everybody's kind of talking about the same thing here, i.e. there's a huge gap in not necessarily knowledge, but maybe it's knowledge plus applied knowledge that would develop the skills that the industry is looking for. As we talk about the next generation now going out into the OTC, is that something that you see as a possibility that there could be this, again, essential skills necessary, whether it's at 2-year level, 4-year level, whatever, that we could be then taking out and giving that those prerequisites to our colleges, universities, whatever, and they begin to now turn out, whether they're in LeGrand or they're in Medford or wherever, we begin to turn out those skilled people that now we have access for that get those gaps in our workforce. Is that something you're considering?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess what, just to keep going, I guess I would say we're not getting it from our current academia. I think we have to say that. We're not turning out the skill set with the applied knowledge that leads to the ability to really interact in a way, to fill those gaps that are in our workforce.
Well, Representative Johnson and Chair Reed, I think that's exactly one of the issues is this efficiency thing. And it was alluded to by one of the members of the committee earlier, where you have a lot of different sort of industry advisory boards that are being convened, sometimes by different departments within the same university or higher ed institution. And they all want the same thing. So with industry being pushed and pulled in a zillion different directions, part of it is making sure that we have a single point of contact where they can meet efficiently during their course of the year and say, okay, here's what our roadmap looks like in the next 12 to 18 months, you know, 3 years in terms of our hiring needs. And specifically, here are the latest skills that we need. And there are some things that are going to be able to be met by university and higher ed, right? So they're going to be able to spin up a curriculum and have a degree program and for credit. And there are other things that community colleges and other types of flexible certification programs, sometimes administered jointly with universities, can be done flexibly in shorter periods of time. A number of the universities that we're working with around the state are actually looking at exactly this, whether it's in data science or whether it's in programs like product management. We've seen a lot of the ability to move quickly, but it's still ad hoc and piecemeal. And so something like the OTC will help kind of bring it all together and coordinate it.
I certainly believe that there are sufficient insights on the committee to take a run at defining such things. You know, our insight is a little bit limited to master's and PhD level, just because of the nature of the kinds of things that we do. And I have participated on boards of EEC as departments of several universities and tried to personally provide some guidance, though frustratingly, the university teams left unattended tend to gravitate to theoretical technology aggressive problems that are not necessarily practically applicable, and we as industry have responsibility to drive them if we are to have hope of these people producing useful personnel.
Thank you. I can read between the lines.
Although I feel compelled to say sometimes those lead to great things later on, but I'm sure you meant that too. That's right. Representative Hayden and Representative Reardon, keeping in mind we've got a lot of other people too, please.
Just real quickly, Chair Reed, thank you. Can you just briefly speak to how you will identify the need in Oregon? What I'm hearing is that this is kind of a global need or a need at least in the states all across. You mentioned Arizona, a need there. How, and bringing the industry in, I think, is critical to the process. But is there areas unique to Oregon or a niche unique to Oregon that we can help provide funding for with the hope of retaining a higher percent of this workforce in Oregon?
Yeah, let me take a try at this. I think that the new emerging area called Internet of Things offers a lot of interesting opportunities. The crux of Internet of Things is combining a particular application domain with internet that reaches everywhere. One of the, I think, assets that Oregon has is we have a lot of what I would call real-world applications. People in Silicon Valley have a tendency to focus on technology only, but in order to solve problems that are relevant and interesting, you need to have domain expertise. Like, for instance, no matter how hard I think about this problem, I could not come up with any interesting solutions for in the agriculture space. I'm not an expert. I don't know what can, but I know what can be done with IoT technology. And so I think there are industries that are specific to that are strong in Oregon that can provide the main expertise if we can effectively bridge them to the university research teams. And that's one way of differentiating the state.
Thank you. Representative Reardon?
Just real quick. Thank you, Chair Reed. I look at the whole educational system, and I'm thinking of that feeder program, which is middle school, high school, and so forth. Do you see there being sort of a connection between the Oregon Talent Council and your efforts and how that might trickle down to the lower levels? And specifically, I'm really concerned that counselors, teachers, really don't have the connections necessarily with the demand that's out there. I mean, I hear you guys talking, and I get so excited, I want to go back and, you know, take classes again and restart my career. So how can we get that excitement? Don't worry, I'm not going to. How do we get that excitement down into those middle school, high school so that they're jazzed up about these careers, because that's where it starts.
I think it's a great challenge for a committee to consider. I'm doing my part. I'm speaking at my son's school on April 16th. But that's just a microscopic, isolated case. I do believe that we need to consider some kind of systemic approach to this.
And I think Representative Reardon and Chair Reed, that it goes back to kind of the benefit of the efficiency of the coordinated and aligned system, is that if we're doing these skills assessments on the part of industry, those can very easily be, just as they're transferred to higher ed and workforce and economic development folks, they can be used to help inform some of the curriculum development that's happening at the K-12 level. And through programs, there are a number of them around the state that are working in that area, focused on STEM and STEAM. I think that those will be another opportunity to kind of align with the work of the council, especially as it relates to data around what the industry needs are.
I do agree, though, the seeds are planted in middle school, and right now there isn't any particular focus or thrust on that.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to a panel on critical sectors. Joel Fisher, Jane Rankin-Gunderson, Maureen Fault, and Dennis McNanny. It looks like we're going to need one more chair, but perhaps you can pull it. Two and two, okay. Joel Fisher and Jane Rankin-Gunderson, then we'll switch it up.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher with the Oregon Business Association. I think you've already heard me tell the story about the rural Oregon tour that we've done, and so I won't tell it again. I'll just reference it. And we saw around Oregon, small, medium-sized, large business owners saying over and over that they want to be hiring for jobs, but what they're lacking is people with the skills for the jobs that they have and they're ready to hire for. And the Oregon Talent Council really is the answer to that. I want to reference a video that I can send you all later. You may have heard of the Tech Town video, which is kind of a Portland-specific video, so forgive me for being Portland-specific, but I feel like I've done a pretty good job of covering rural Oregon, and it does relate. They just put out a second Tech Town video, and it is like it's just targeted towards recruiting people from the East Coast to come to Portland. And my feeling after watching that was, why are we doing that when we can be growing our own and our own students here in Oregon? People really are looking to recruit out of state. The Oregon Talent Council is the answer to that. It's about connecting education to careers. It's about connecting industry to the talent pool that they need. And it's about those core skills that can be used in a number of different industry sectors. And that's what these next two panels are going to talk to you about. It's needed in healthcare, it's needed in energy, it's needed in food, science, agriculture. They all need the same electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, people who have skills around big data and cybersecurity. And so with that, I'll turn it over to the next panel.
Thanks Joel. Thank you.
Chair Reed. Members of the committee, my name is Jane Rankin-Gunderson. I am the Vice President of Talent and Development for Peace Health. Peace Health has been providing healthcare services to the Pacific Northwest since the late 1800s. In our health system's mission and service to Oregonians, we operate hospitals, healthcare clinics, and laboratories in Lane and Douglas counties. We have just under 6,000 employees working in Oregon and close to 1,000 job openings in Oregon and Southern Washington. Across our system, Peace Health makes significant investments in education of our current and future workforce through continuing education and professional development, and in providing internships, clinical training, externships, and for healthcare professional students and others. On behalf of my colleagues in healthcare, I am here to ask for your support to pass the bill 2728 and establish the Oregon Talent Council. Training and education in healthcare industry talent ranges from modest post-secondary education, which is really growing with the new models of care, and certifications to highly advanced skilled technicians and healthcare professionals. In addition to an ongoing demand for clinicians, there is a growing number of critical jobs and occupations that cut across other industries such as informatic managers, data analysts, IT professionals, process improvement specialists. Further, state and federal healthcare reforms involve a redesign of workforce skills and curricula updates for the educational pipeline. Ultimately, what is needed are well-connected healthcare and education systems to address the workforce needs of Oregon's transforming healthcare industry. The breadth and depth of talent in high-growth industries like healthcare requires education and workforce partnerships that are well-connected and based on industry information and engagement to guide education programs with up-to-date information required in a redesigned healthcare system. The Oregon Talent Council will help facilitate this process. The council would serve as a key portal for industry to provide a comprehensive vision of employers' workforce needs that can be used by multiple education partners with the goal that the investment in Oregon students lead to increased placements in Oregon jobs. This type of comprehensive approach can reduce redundancy at the educational program level, encourage sharing of curricula and facilities, promote innovation in the delivery of education, particularly to students in our rural communities, and identify capacity gaps and needs. Further, the council creates an avenue to tie together the state's education goals with the state's health policy goals. The Oregon Talent Council is seen as a practical, collaborative approach for bridging the challenging workforce of healthcare needs in Oregon and the investment in education. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Let's hear from the rest of the panel before we take questions. And as you get started, Mr. McNeil, if you want to join us, and we'll save a little time in the next transition, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Maureen Fault. I'm responsible for workforce planning at Portland General Electric, and I also serve on the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. I'm going to vastly truncate my comments in favor of my CEO, who is also on the docket to speak and chairs the STEM Investment Council. But I would like to perhaps leave you with two data points that I think underscore what you've been hearing about increasingly complex skills crossing over into other industries. So our industry is complex, and we do have workers all over the state of Oregon. And the average salary of someone who works in energy is about $80,000. But if you look more closely at some of the lifelong career paths that we have, our engineers and our technical workers who are non-engineers but still highly skilled earn an average of $95,000 a year. So our industry is vital to the prosperity of the state of Oregon, but these career paths are really vital to individual prosperity. One example that I'll leave you with about why the Oregon Talent Council makes sense to help us be able to hire locally to reduce both cost and risk is a recent hire. We do a lot of hiring in rural Oregon, even though we are based out of Portland, but we are building power plants and of all kinds, wind plants. And so one example, to hire an engineer at our Boardman plant in Boardman, Oregon, we looked out of state to, we found a master's candidate in another state pursuing a graduate degree in engineering. He was an international student, and we hired him on a STEM immigration visa and are now applying for an H-1B-1 visa, hoping that he will stay. So that's just a data point about the challenges that we are facing in finding talent. So we expect that STEM careers will double. The number of STEM careers will double in the next 8 years. And so we're very excited about the Oregon Talent Council and the benefits it can bring in terms of both Oregon's prosperity and that of its workers. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairman Reed, members of the committee, I appreciate the time you're giving us to talk about a very important topic. We're testifying, of course, in support of House Bill 2728. For the record, my name is Dennis McNanny. I'm the president of the Oregon Bioscience Association. In the interest of truncation, I think I'll get to a couple key points. One of the things that makes our organization somewhat unique, I represent 175 companies, member companies, that long ago decided that they had to build their own training program because training didn't exist in the areas that we needed, some of the gap training. I think Representative Johnson, you hit on a key point, which is that the universities really aren't in a position in many cases to be able to produce the kind of training programs, professional training programs, that provide the perfect augmentation that makes somebody with a degree truly employable. I'll give you an example. Maybe two weeks ago, I gave a tour of the chairman of Eli Lilly, South Waterfront, and some of the things going on in Portland, the bioscience community, and he was literally blown away with the capacity, facilities, and equipment that were at the new.
Uncle wasn't literally,
I'll tell you the most important part of the story. He said awesome about four times as he went through the program, the tour. Joe Gray was giving the tour, and Dr. Gray took him into a room where they had shaved four cells, one of which was a cancer cell, an angstrom at a time. And they had just done something they'd never done before, which is they were about to leave that station, and the technician said, well, should we show them what we did this week? And I'd taken the tour a lot, and I knew that there wasn't anything new that I hadn't heard about. They had 3D printed these four cells with the tendrils all snaking up into each other. It's the first time the CEO of Eli Lilly and their genomic cancer expert had ever seen a cell printed before in that way. And I got a picture of them taking a picture of the CEO of Eli Lilly holding the cell with his worldwide genomic expert. And what that tells me is if we can leverage the Talent Council to build very focused training programs in conjunction with industry programs like our own BioPro training program and supplement these and leverage these facilities and capacities, we can be a world leader in certain new areas, which is really the trick to leveraging technology trends. That equipment exists, that combination of equipment and software exists nowhere else in the world. So we're already proposing with OHSU to build training programs around that, and I think they're emblematic of the kind of training programs that can really upstart our workforce and really support the kind of innovation that we hope comes from the Knight Cancer Institute. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Johnson and I were both there, and he was relaying the picture of that.
That's the cell.
It is awesome. Yeah.
I did have to mention, as the industry person there, that all that capacity and equipment is available on a fee-for-service basis.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the basis on which we'll get even more people to come, but more importantly, train our local workforce to really be on the cutting edge.
Well said. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here and your testimony. We have five more folks to hear from, and I think what we ought to do is hear from Jim Pyro, president of PGE, the aforementioned Jim Pyro, as well as Chris Maples and Brent Wilder, if they are here. There they are. You were hiding back there. Sorry, Jim. Please.
Okay.
Go ahead, I'll go first.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Chairman Reed, members of the committee, my name is Jim Pyro, and I'm president and CEO of Portland General Electric. I currently serve as co-chair of the CTE STEM Employers Coalition, and I'm currently serving as the chair of the STEM Investment Council, and it's that capacity that I'm testifying today. I think you just previously heard from Maureen Fault, one of my colleagues, about the importance of the Oregon Talent Council to our company and the energy industry in general, and we're very supportive of HB 2728. So maybe some framework. The STEM Council was established in 2012 by HB 2636 for the purpose of developing strategic policy and making recommendations to the Chief Education Officer and the Oregon Education Investment Board in order to achieve two things. First of all, double the math and science achievement scores for Oregon students in fourth and eighth grade levels by 2025, and then double the number of STEM degrees and certificates for Oregon students by 2025. We're also responsible for managing the investments the investment fund to make these things happen and achieve these goals. The committee, the Oregon STEM Investment Council, is made up of 9 members, all from business, focused at delivering the results we've been asked to deliver on. There's been some good work going on in the state. We spent last year looking at some of the great things going on in the state, and the good news is there are some pockets of good programs in the state, but it's not systemic across the system, and many children aren't being exposed to learning experiences to stimulate their interest in CTE and STEM careers. Our council is currently developing a strategic plan for our programs. We're working on data and metrics to measure outcomes, and we're working on a communications plan to educate parents and children of the opportunities in CTE and STEM. We've developed 3 core strategies to expand and deliver on our goals. First of all, to expand the STEM hubs that are region-wide across the state to 12, invest in promising programs that can be moved to scale to support and achieve our desired goals and outcomes, and invest in post-secondary programs that improve recruitment and retention of STEM students, especially for both women and students of color and poverty. The STEM Investment Council has been very supportive and engaged in the conversation, the importance of restarting CTE programs across the state, both in middle schools and high schools. We're working very closely on that conversation, and I've had conversations with Senator Dembro on the potential of reconstituting the STEM Investment Council to create both a kind of combined CTE-STEM Investment Council because of the important linkage between CTE and STEM. Just to give you a sense of the demand for CTE and STEM jobs, and this is mostly on the STEM side, there's about the forecast by the Oregon Employment Department is there's about 70,000 jobs over the next 10 years in the STEM fields, roughly 7,000 per year. Oregon students are only graduating about 1,000 STEM degrees per year. That's about 2%. So about 40,000 kids graduate from high school. Only 2%, less than 1,000, graduate with a STEM degree. So there's and these numbers are not perfect, but in orders of magnitude, there are way too many students not filling these jobs, and we have a huge demand for those jobs, as I think you've heard previously. That is where the Oregon Talent Council will help in providing better clarity on the needs of business for employees with competencies in CTE and STEM degrees. The OTC would work closely with the business community, as you've heard, and really identifying those employees' skills and educational attainments that's necessary to fill those important jobs. So the connection and alignment between the STEM Investment Council and the Oregon Talent Council is very strong. It really connects the learning opportunities for students and the high-demand, high-wage jobs in both CTE and STEM. The STEM Investment Council is building the broad-based pipeline and foundational skills to fill the STEM jobs, and the OTC would then ensure that there are programs designed to fill those specific jobs which are currently not being filled by Oregonians. As a result, there needs to be a very tight coordination between OTC and the STEM Investment Council to ensure Oregonians have learning opportunities in K through 12, outside school classes, and post-secondary to develop the essential skills and educational attainments necessary to fill those high-wage jobs, and that our Oregon employers realize the value created in their businesses from this focused effort. So we are very supportive of this effort. We're also supportive of the amendments to HB 2728 that would incentivize institutions to increase the percentage of students of color and the rural poor in STEM fields, because this part of our population is disproportionately not attaining the outcomes of other students. So thank you for the chance to address this committee. We hope that we have success in this effort, and look forward to your questions.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Who's next?
Good morning, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Brent Wilder. I'm the Vice President of the Alliance. We represent 18 regionally accredited not-for-profit colleges here in Oregon. We're here today to express our strong support for House Bill 2728. The Oregon Talent Council would create a much-needed strategic connection between education and industry for the purpose of talent development. The Alliance Colleges and Universities represent 35,000 students. 30% of all baccalaureate degrees that are offered in Oregon. Together, we offer 240 fields of study. Some of those are engineering, computer science, and health professions. In the fall of 2014, Oregonians accounted for 43% of the total undergraduate enrollment at Alliance Colleges and Universities, and 12% of all first-time students enrolled in Alliance College and University previously attended an Oregon Community College. As you've heard before, we're a contributing partner to the state's 40-40-20 educational attainment goals, And we're doing so through a select number of highly intentional strategic initiatives. Our board reaffirmed those back in March 2012. Those needs intersect the needs of the Alliance public, Alliance colleges and universities, the needs of the public good, and business and industry to create real solutions that build a more educated and skilled workforce for Oregon. At present, those two strategic initiatives focus on collaborative programs to increase student access and success, and collaborative programs to support talent development and the transition from education to careers. The goals and objectives of the Oregon Talent Council align with the Alliance strategic initiatives and would enable Oregon's private not-for-profit colleges and universities to participate in a statewide effort to build a skilled talent pipeline that serves an array of industries. Our participation would enhance OTC's efficiency and scope through sharing and collaboration. We have several examples of our institutions that are working on programs that are meeting the needs of Oregon industry. And I thank you for consideration of House Bill 2728. We enthusiastically support the policy included in this bill and look forward to collaborating with stakeholders to help achieve the objectives of the Oregon Business Plan and the state's 40-40-20 education attainment goals. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. President.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Maples. I'm president of Oregon Institute of Technology, a.k.a. Oregon Tech. Oregon's public, polytechnic, four-year, and master's university within the state. We do STEM. That's what we do. Where our graduates have better than a 90% success rate within 6 months of graduating and the highest return on investment of any university in the state of Oregon. I'm here today speaking on behalf of Oregon's seven public universities in support of House Bill 2728. Very pleased to see that that what is being proposed will broaden the sectors that will benefit from the strategic investments to include healthcare, energy, value-added agriculture, and other areas. That's a really important aspect of this bill. These are high-paying careers, and to the extent that we can keep high-paying careers and high-paying jobs here in Oregon, the state benefits in many, many, many ways. ETIC investments have stimulated success in collaborations in all seven public universities, and I will provide examples from Oregon Tech because these are the ones that I'm most familiar with. From 2003 to 2013, we have more than doubled the number of engineering and technology graduates and added a full portfolio of ABET-accredited engineering programs, thanks in large part to ETIC support. We would not have been able to do that during that time period when there was, within a five-year period from 2008 to 2013, approximately a 46% cut in state support for public higher ed. We've had expansion of Oregon Tech's optical engineering program, responding to Wilsonville area and strategic planning, along with the needs of 84 companies in Oregon. Another example involves systems engineering, a need that we were made aware of by our Electrical Engineering Renewable Energy Department Industry Advisory Council, as well as by our neighbors in Wilsonville, Xerox, Mentor Graphics, and others. Currently, there are 19 systems engineering BS programs in the U.S., zero in Oregon. ETIC funds have been requested to design, develop, and launch a new BS degree in systems engineering and management. ETIC funds over the years have stimulated collaboration as well. Most recently, ETIC support has been requested to establish a consortium with Oregon State, Portland State, and the University of Oregon on cybersecurity workforce development related to energy, energy storage, and grid integration and reliability. And there was mention of OHSU, and just to make sure that they are included in all of this, in the healthcare arena, we are working with OHSU to establish the first public university program in Oregon in physical therapy at the doctorate level that would be in the Klamath Falls campus. I would say that this cannot be just existing money. This really should be new money. The funds to support an Oregon Talent Council cannot just come from existing ETIC sustaining resources that will be managed by the HEC. Our provosts collectively worked together and sent a letter to the committee, and I will quote two sentences actually from their letter to the committee. This bill will work if it provides new funding to reach out and meet the needs of more industries and to involve more educational sectors. It does not work if it simply involves transferring or diminishing the current investments in engineering education at the public four-year universities that continue to serve the state well. this is a great opportunity to stimulate additional resources in terms of human capital for the industries and the needs in Oregon. And we are all in great support of this. It's a terrific idea. We hope to see it go forward. Thank you very much.
Questions for these gentlemen? I think we're hearing some unanimity, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Our last two folks to testify, Karen Godden from Business Oregon and Lisa Neisenfeld from the Oregon Employment Department, folks who are going to help implement this idea, we hope. Karen, if you could join us, that'd be great. Thanks. And in fact, perhaps we should ask you to go first, since I have a rough idea of what you might say. And I expect we might have some more extensive questions from Ms. Neisenfeld.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. For the record, I'm Karen Godden, Assistant Director of Research and Policy Division at Business Oregon. I'm delighted to be here today to lend the agency support for the Oregon Talent Council and for the placement of the council in the Oregon Employment Department. I don't know what I could add to the testimony that's already been delivered with regard to the skill gap, the critical economic development role that the impact of this gap has on the economy and how important it is, and all of the testimony we've heard about the need for a coordinated approach, economic development, workforce, and education. And we're in total agreement and see the OTC playing a very critical role in that effort. Many of you are aware that our director, Sean Robbins, this summer led a listening tour around the state, which was joined by the two business organizations. And we heard during that tour that the skill gap and workforce gaps was such a critical issue around the state. Again, validating what we had been hearing from companies that we work with on a daily basis, who tell our business development officers, our finance officers, that sometimes they're not thinking about expanding because they're not sure that they can actually find the skilled workers and be able to employ people through those expansion plans. We also have heard from new businesses that are coming here, one of the key questions that they ask about is what is your workforce? How many very detailed descriptions around how many occupations do you have in this area to look at? So these are just further validation points for how the department sees the needs for improvements in this area. I just would add that we work very closely with the employment department and see the OTC is very complementary and building on the great work that they do on behalf of the state and furthering Oregon's economic prosperity. And so we have no hesitation and believe it is, in fact, the best place for the OTC to be placed. So
thank you. It was nice to feel like sort of held back because everybody's been talking about you. I'm glad you've been in the room. We wanted to hear from you and your reaction to all this and your plans, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Neisenfeld. I'm the director of the Oregon Employment Department. As a former director of a regional economic development organization and also a workforce board, I can confidently say that Oregon has been a leader in sector strategies, industry sector strategies for workforce, since 1989. But it's been a very patchwork and limited effort with federal funds usually forming the basis of it, which limited audiences and the scope of the work. Programs have sprung up, typically various tools that became ends of in and of themselves, and we've forgotten the ends that are important in making this work effective. I'm not suggesting that workforce preparation is the only effective end of education programs. I am personally a proud liberal arts graduate. But It's important work we need to do for Oregon's economy. I see the silos that we have to work across strategically in order to weave these efforts together in a holistic way that addresses the needs that can only be effectively articulated by industry. This kind of industry engagement helps us shape those tools and make sure they're responsive to the needs. Last week we were with you talking about the workforce system. The OTC is focused on that professional, highly technical, and super skilled occupational cluster, and it fills a major void in industry needs for our state. It will also allow the workforce system to co-invest in some of the strategies where we have overlap and across that workforce spectrum. It will support the OEIB's pathways to connecting education to careers work, our CTE investments, our workforce sector initiatives, and, of course, our community college and university capacities so that we can directly optimize those resources to address industry needs. OED offered to host the OTC because it's an opportunity to broaden those strategies, avoid duplication, and better use the time of our industry partners and cross-pollinate the programs. Particularly, we want to see a close coordination with our local workforce investment boards, and we've already begun having some of those conversations between members. It will also help existing state efforts across agency lines with the Community College and Workforce Development Unit of the HEC, with Business Oregon, and the opportunity to broaden our scope of discussions to the K-12 system, especially through the STEM Council. Building those resources as a neutral broker, we think we can help grow the economy and result in high-demand, high-wage jobs for Oregonians. So thank you.
Very concise. Questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lisa, a couple questions for you. I have two areas of concern that I think you can shed some light on. One would be in Section 1, where it does call for the employment director of the employment department, that be you, in consultation with the governor's designated representative, to be the appointers of the council members, the appointees, if you will. I guess what I want to ensure is that you're also or perhaps seeking advice from industry people in who would be good choices in that. And I mean, I'm referring to the fellow sitting behind you, so that there is some informed information that goes along with that process.
Representative Reed, Representative Johnson, and members of the committee, absolutely. I actually was a little surprised at that element of the bill. So we will consult with industry foremost, but I think we will also consult with our partners in universities, colleges, and K-12 to make sure we're getting a broad cross-section of companies that are interested and involved in this kind of work across the state and across industries.
Well, I would follow up.
Please.
I would just ask that you not go too broad in seeking input, because sometimes that makes it hard to come to strategic good decisions. My second question or second concern would be the 10% of the money appropriated would go to the employment department to help with support, staffing, and so forth. I really want to strongly encourage you that the staff support you employ or that you choose are people who are able to think outside the box about how things have been done. One of the things, and I'll just add what I'm getting into, is that one of the things that we sometimes encounter with the agency level is we have people who have been around for quite some time and they've gotten used to do things in a particular way. OTC is about doing things in a new way. And it's a new council, and I really want to strongly encourage that the staff support that you provide for them are able to think in a fresh and a new way so we can move forward in a way that we haven't in the past.
Representative Reed, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, I will commit to letting the OTC itself make that decision within the bounds of the law.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? We've come to the end of our list. I think we covered everyone. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2728? I don't see anyone. What I have to say, what I'm excited about is the range of perspectives that are represented here, the commitment I'm hearing to making this work. We have a little bit more work on some tweaking and refining amendments, some of which Representative Johnson mentioned. But I think there's real interest on the part of the committee to the fact that people had to rush off to other obligations tonight, this morning should not reflect anything other than that. So I think we'll be back to this before too long. So I appreciate you all being here. Thanks for a great, very interesting, and very diverse hearing. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2728. And unless there is anything else to come before the committee this morning,
8 o'clock Monday.
8 o'clock Monday. Yes, please. We are adjourned. Thanks.
Good job, Dean. Good job.
Yeah. Well done. Thanks.
Good job, Dean.
Yeah.